this week, March 17th, 2015, on The Digital Story. iFi rubbed raw. Expensive filters. A low-pro reboot. All of this and more with yours truly, Derek Story, on The Digital Story. Welcome back to another Digital Story. I have a messenger bag full of goodies for you today. We're going to start out with a weekly update. I got a few feature stories. Have a terrific screening room for you. Wow. Okay, buckle up and let's get going with the weekly update. The weekly update. First story. LowPro launches weatherproof fastback backpacks for traveling photographers. Compliments of DP Review. Let me read you a little bit of their copy. Both bags, and there are two versions of this fastpack, both bags include LowPro's all-weather AW cover, which I think is interesting because AW stands for all-weather. So when they say all-weather AW, anyway, okay, which is basically a built-in raincoat that can be untucked and pulled over the bag in a rain shower. The tablet sections features what LowPro calls a cradle-fit padding that grips and suspends the tablet so that it remains protected even in the event of a drop. Using compression straps, the bags are designed to also attach to the handles of a rolling luggage, and both can support tripod via straps and a mesh pocket. And that, again, is from DP Review. Well, I picked this story for a couple reasons. One is there's a bit of an interesting history behind the Fastpack. Back in the day, back when I first started working with LowPro, which was quite a while ago, the Fastpack was like their number one seller, possibly along with the Slingshot. So it was the Fastpack and the Slingshot, but I think the Fastpack even outsold the Slingshot. And the Fastpack was innovative in the sense that you had side access to your camera from a photo backpack. So you could take it off one of the shoulders. It was a two-shoulder backpack. You could take it off one shoulder, swing it around, open up the side pocket, pull out your camera, shoot, 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 put your camera back in, slide it back around, and off you went. And they just sold a ton of those, and they were extremely popular. Problem was that it was designed, at least initially, as an urban bag. So there was no all-weather cover, and there was no tripod holder. And so that was the thing that, you know, this is when I came on as an evangelist for them. This is the thing that I always heard. Well, why don't you make one with an all-weather cover? Why don't you add a tripod holder? You know, we were always getting all these sort of things on Facebook and so forth. They went back to the drawing board. This is after the Fastpack has had a nice long haul, and they're still selling well. I mean, this thing's been out for a few years now, which, you know, in terms of gear, to have something still selling strong in its third year is fairly impressive. So this thing's still selling like gangbusters, but they know they have to update it. And they decide to do the right thing, which is add a tripod holder, add an all-weather cover, and then, you know, kind of update the look a bit. Then they couldn't decide what to call it. And this was funny because they were still selling the original Fastpack, so they didn't want to call it the same name and cause confusion with what was already in inventory and with what a lot of distributors already loved. But yet they want to kind to hook it to the Fastpack line, so people would know its basic design and maybe they could piggyback off the original backpack's success. So they went round and round and round. What do we call this? What do we call this thing? At that time, DSLR video was really hot. I mean, the Canon 5D Mark II was out. So that was like a hot topic. So they wanted to cash in on that too. So they went through this kind of lengthy brainstorm about what to call it. And they ended up with the name, the DSLR Video Fastpack. And then it was either the 150, 250, or 350 depending on the size. There were three sizes. The DSLR Video Fastpack, blah, blah, blah. Now, really, all it was the original Fastpack with an updated look, and they added the rain cover, and they added the tripod holder. But people really got confused by the name. First of all, the name was too long. Second of all, people were going, well, I don't shoot DSLR video, so this isn't the right bag for me. When, of course it is. It's a photographer's bag. It's a camera bag. But, you know, this was a critical mistake in the marketing of this bag to, you know, peg it to DSLR video, which clearly is a minority of the photographers that are out there. Even though it was a better bag, in fact, I loved this bag, it didn't sell. It didn't sell well at all. And in fact, the original Fastpack kept selling better than this brand new one that was updated, that had the features that everyone was crying for with the original one. But we just could not get the message out that this was a Fastpack. It just had a funky name, but it had all the features that everyone had been asking for. And finally, we just gave up. It was just clear that, you know, it's like that building. There's a building in every town that there's been like 20 restaurants in that building. Great restaurants, restaurants that do all sorts of creative things, nice service, good prices, whole deal. And for some reason, if that restaurant goes in that building, it's going to fail. It's just doomed for whatever reason. It's got a jinx on it. Well, that's what happened with the DSLR Video Fastpack. Then we get this announcement today. So this brings us to today, where they have a new Fastpack, and it's just they went back to just calling it the Fastpack. So apparently, all the original Fastpacks have finally cleared out of inventory. We don't have to worry about it being confused with the DSLR Video Fastpack. And they're just calling it Fastpack. They just came out with two models. It's BP. So now it's Fastpack BP150, Fastpack BP250. BP probably stands for backpack or something. Clearly, they're not going to make the mistake that they made before by giving it this big, long name that just confuses people. So now it's Fastpack BP. It's hard to say. So now it's Fastpack BP150. And that's the story behind that. The new one, by the way, looks terrific. It has basically all the features of the DSLR Video Fastpack. Plus, they've updated it for holding tablets. Plus, they kind of went back to some of the design aesthetic of the first Fastpack that everyone loved. But they updated it a bit. And they didn't give it a bad name. So this one should sell well. If you're looking for a good, general, everyday backpack that can carry your laptop, your tablet, your camera gear, tripod, of course, now, right? And will protect you in a little rain shower. This is a bag worth looking at. They're affordably priced. And that is the story behind the Lowepro Fastpack BP150 and 250. In other news, iFi's new Mobi Pro SD card lets you sync raw photos. This is from Imaging Resource. Of course, the links are in the show notes. Quote, self-proclaimed as the most powerful wireless SD card ever, the Mobi Pro sets itself apart from iFi's lower-level Mobi cards by now allowing you to transfer raw files to your desktop or mobile device straight from your camera. So, yes, there's a new Mobi out for those who still have digital cameras they love that don't have built-in Wi-Fi but want that functionality. And this new card does a couple things. We'll talk about RAW in a second. I'll get to RAW in a second. The thing that I think is even more important than the RAW file functionality is that now you can, with a Mobi card, you can select the photos that you want to transfer to your mobile device or to your computer. The problem with the original Mobi card, which worked well, was that it was like an all or nothing proposition. Everything on the card went to your mobile device, and you know how that's going to work out for most of us. So being able to select now, I think, is pretty cool. It's a 32 gigabyte card, so it's got lots of storage. Now, the raw thing, though, I want to talk about for a second. I'm thinking that they incorporated raw functionality because they needed, and they, I mean iFi, needed to differentiate themselves from all the cameras that are coming out now that have built-in Wi-Fi that, for the most part, transfer JPEGs. And there's a reason why they transfer JPEGs. And this is just, okay, my personal opinion right now. Okay, so everything at this part is just my opinion. There's a reason why they only transfer JPEGs, because who in the heck wants to transfer RAW files to your phone? I don't, you know, I get this question every now and then. I do not understand why anyone wants to send a RAW file to their phone. I mean, unless you're just going to pass it on to an art director somewhere or something like that, and you have to do it in a pinch, that can be the only reason that I can think of. And there's a, I have a couple thoughts around this, as you may have surmised by now. First of all, the JPEGs produced by most cameras these days are fantastic. They're beautiful. They're gorgeous. And when you first load them onto your computer, they're prettier than the RAW files because the camera's done all sorts of secret sauce processing to them already, and they're gorgeous. Whereas the RAW file comes in, it's a RAW file. You've got to use Lightroom. You've got to use Aperture, Adobe Camera Raw, whatever you're using. You got to use that to make it look pretty, unless you have a really great profile that automatically interprets it in a gorgeous way. The JPEGs are gorgeous. They're big. There's lots of detail. If you send a JPEG over to your iPhone or to your Galaxy Note, whatever you're using, then you've got a lot of picture there. And if you're just posting on Facebook or Instagram or something like that, or putting it up to a Smug Mug gallery even, or putting it on Flickr, I mean, any of these things that I'm mentioning, the JPEG is going to be fantastic. You can do a little bit of editing to it. And the transfer rate, you know, is reasonable because the file isn't too big. Now, transferring a RAW file via an iFi Mobi Pro, which has a built-in radio into the card that sends the stuff from the card to directly to whatever device is logged into it, that is going to be a painful experience. I am telling you right now, sending however many megabytes the RAW file is going to be painful via Wi-Fi, this kind of Wi-Fi especially. And then once it gets to your mobile device, there's only a few applications that can process RAW. And then we go back to my first point, which is, why are you doing this in the first place when you got a beautiful JPEG available to you? The thing about this new card is you can take advantage of the other features, and the RAW transfer is optional. There's a little switch in the preferences. So you can shoot, as I would in this case, RAW plus JPEG, only send the JPEGs over to your mobile device. Do whatever you need to do, you know, post them. Then when you get home and you fire up Lightroom, and you can put all the RAW files in Lightroom, and then you can do whatever you want to do to those, and you've got the best of both worlds. Personally, if I were marketing this new Mobi Pro SD card, which full price is $99, I believe, for the 32 gigabyte model, they were running a special for folks that had bought Mobi cards before. I think it's just expired for like $59. I was tempted, and I was going, no, I don't. My cameras have Wi-Fi built in. So I read a review instead, right? There you go. If you have a camera that doesn't have Wi-Fi, this is probably a great card. I would turn off the RAW. I would take the selective thing. And even on the JPEGs, if you're shooting RAW plus JPEGs, I would pick, for the most part, the medium size JPEG, fine resolution. That'll transfer over faster, and I think you'll have a much better experience while you're working in the field. And that is this week's weekly update. Story number one. Think of your filters as very thin lenses. Okay, so what am I talking about here? All right, well, here's what I'm talking about. I just spent $48 for a Hoya 46mm EVO anti-static UV filter. In other words, a protection filter for And it's actually for my 17mm f1.8 Olympus lens. Why did I do that? You know, I mean, I could get a 46mm filter for $20, $18, something like that. Why did I spend $48 when I could have gotten off the hook for $18, $30 less? There are a couple reasons which will lead back to the title of this piece. I'm going to read you some of those reasons right now. These are some of the selling points that you can see at B&H Photo, where I bought this. By the way, the link to this filter is in the show notes. Here we go. Absorbs ultraviolet light, helping to reduce bluish cast. Okay, well, they all can do that. But that's one of the reasons that UV filters are actually helpful. 16-layer super multi-coating, which has a 99.8% light transmission. They all can't do that. Yeah, no. This is now, you know, we're in a different place now, okay? EVO anti-static coating repels dust, also water, stain, and it's scratch resistant. Optical glass construction, one piece low profile filter ring, which lessens the likelihood of vignetting. And then of course it has front threads for filter stacking, which all the other ones do too. So what really makes this filter different than, let's say, the $18 filter, 16-layer multi-coating, and then a special coating, a special EVO anti-static coating, very high-quality glass, and a very nice filter ring. Don't discount that. Now, the reason why I titled this, you know, think of your filter as a very thin lens, because if you look at this filter or any high-quality filter, and you play with it in the light, you'll notice the same qualities as you will on the front element of your lens. If you're like me and you like to protect your lenses and you're out and about a lot, you're not only taking pictures in a protected dust-free environment, is that I can leave this filter on all the time, no matter what. No matter what I'm doing, no matter what I'm shooting, I don't have to take it off and put it back on and set it down and play with it. I can just leave it on all the time because the quality of the glass and the transmission is so good. I'm not losing any contrast. I'm not creating any ghosting. And I'm not losing any sharpness. Plus, with this coating, it's easy to clean. So if I stick my thumb on the front of it, it wipes right off. If I accidentally, you know, mark it with a felt tip marker, I can wipe it off. It won't scratch. If it's raining and water drops on it, now I usually use a lens hood in the rain also, but if some water gets on it, it will bead and roll off. It won't stay there and be all smeary. It'll be like your car right after you've waxed it in a light shower. You know how pretty the cars look? They're so pretty. You know, I like cars too, as you know. But a freshly waxed car in a light rain is really a beautiful thing. And I just love the way the water beads up on the surface of the car. Well, it does the same thing to this filter. So I put this filter on this lens, and I do not have to worry about the front of the lens. It's done. So these filters are really an extension of the lens itself. For those of you that have always been a little nervous about leaving a filter on the front of your lens because you think you're going to compromise the optical ability of that lens, take a look at this latest class of filters that are out. It doesn't have to be Hoya. Oh, you know, they're all making great ones. Tiffin, BW, they're beautiful. They're absolutely beautiful. And it hurts buying filters, no doubt about it. I hate buying filters. I hate buying tires for the car. I hate buying filters. I mean, my latest order, I spent a couple $100 on just odds and ends. There wasn't even a camera in there or anything. It's just like filters and memory cards and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It wasn't very satisfying, let me put it that way. But I know that when I put all this stuff to use, that is protecting, you know, my investment and is protecting my image quality. Story number two. So I have a fun little discovery I want to share with you. This isn't anything brand new. It's been around for a while. Why it hasn't been on my radar, I don't know. But, I posted about it on Facebook, and there's a little piece on it on the Digital Story. And by the looks of the numbers on it anyway, it looks like I wasn't the only one that didn't know about it, which is comforting, right? So I thought, okay, I'll make it a bit on the podcast today. And that way, a few more people who don't know about will know about. So what am I talking about here? I'm talking about an image editor called Fotor, F-O-T-O-R. I'm not going to say Fotor, because that just sounds terrible, doesn't it? Fotor. So I'm going to say Fotor, which actually didn't sound much better. But anyway, you know what it is now. Now that I've tortured you with my pronunciation of it. It's an image editor for the Mac that leverages the built-in technologies in Mac OS X to one of the best degrees I've ever seen. Seriously, and I'm testing Photos for OS X right now. I'm doing the beta on that, which is, also does a great job of leveraging the built-in technologies in Mac OS X. Of course, they're Apple, right? So they should know how to do that. But this image editor that you can get in the Mac App Store, it's free. There is a price for it. And that price is a little bit of real estate in the lower right corner of the image editor itself. They run ads through it. And they've all been photo-related ads. I've had it running for a few days now. I mean, there hasn't been anything like, the stuff you don't want to see. None of that is going through there. Nothing creepy. Just good photo stuff. So it hasn't bothered me at all. That's the only price you pay for it. What you get is an editor that has pretty terrific image editing tools. All the stuff you'd expect: exposure, contrast, shadows, highlights, definition, white balance. I mean, really nice image editing tools. Plus it has effects. Plus it has, I'm going to use like this really old term right now, a really boss tilt shift tool. And what I love about the tilt shift tool is that it has two circles. It has the center circle, which, you can control both circles. Has the center circle, which is the part that remains sharp in your image. Then you have the outer circle, which is the part that gets shifted. So you have, control over it. And then on the right side, the way that they have the controls for it is that they have aperture listings. So they have f2.8, f4, f5.6, f8, f11, f22, like that. So the wider the aperture, like f2.8, the more blurry the stuff outside of the center circle. The smaller the aperture, like f16 or f22, the less blur there is outside of the center circle. It's like a real camera. And it's using real, photography terms and physics and all that stuff. And I just think for something that is consumer-oriented and free, that is cool, because it didn't feel like they sacrificed, being a photographer for a nice lightweight image editor. They have all sorts of filters, as you would imagine, and the filters are always fun to play with. Tons of them. Then they have things like borders, which, borders. We poo-poo borders until we actually need one. Then suddenly, where's that application that has the borders in it? But borders, and then, they have like film edge and frames and, all that good stuff. Then they have a collage making tool that's super easy to use with a bunch of preset templates. And then they have a batch processing tool, which you're going, really? Seriously, you put a batch processing tool in this thing? And it works great. So then you can process a whole bunch of images at once. I could see you using this application for just some quick and dirty batch processing that obviously Photos for OS X can't do or anything like that. The export function gives you a few formats, all the ones that you would expect, and it plays very nice on the computer. Now, you do need a very current version of OS X. You don't have to have the absolute latest version, but it has to be fairly modern because it is leveraging those technologies. As for its raw processing, it uses the same raw processing as your Mac does. So if you can process your camera file in Aperture or iPhoto or Preview, you can in this app too. So you never have to look at a list of what it can handle raw file-wise, because whatever your Mac can handle, it can handle too. And they also make an iOS version, which I've put on my iPhone and my iPad, and I'm really liking it. And they make a Windows 8 version also. So this is a pretty neat app, and it's worth looking at. If you just want something for fast processing and you don't think you're going to go the Photos route, this actually has more functionality than Photos for OS X. And it's fun. I mean, it's just absolutely fun. The design of it is great. It's a neat little app. It really is. I thought you'd be interested in learning about it. If you don't already know, I didn't. But I finally got with the program, and I'm sharing it with you now. Okay, let's take a stroll over to the screening room. Today's pick, today's selection, like a fine wine, is Planning and Staging an Exhibition with Conrad Eek. Now, I featured Conrad before. I think he's a pretty cool instructor, and in part because he does titles that other people don't do. And this one is fun also. So what he's talking about is, how do you figure out how to do a photography show? You know, what are the steps you need to consider? How do you go about going through all the different stages up to hanging it? How do you figure out, you know, what opportunities are available if you want to do a show? You know, what are the different options you have for framing and matting? All that stuff. He covers it in this title, and he actually rents a space and hangs a show for you. I mean, this is cool. So, I mean, if you've been eyeing that coffee shop downtown that always has cool photography on the walls, and you go, I want to do that too, this is a title to watch. Or you're going to hit up your local bank or the Museum of Modern Art. I don't know. I mean, probably there are a few more hoops for that last one. But at any rate, if you're interested in this sort of thing, this is the guy to talk to. This is what he does, and he does a great job of explaining it, and it's just fun to watch. And you can watch the preview movie by going to the Digital Story screening room, lynda.com/thedigitalstory, and that's L-Y-N-D-A. And there's a link to Conrad's introduction movie. And while you're there, if you like what Conrad has to say, you can start your 7-day free trial, watch all of Conrad's movies, plus every other title in the library, including more than 20, by yours truly. So anyway, this week's selection for the screening room is Planning and Staging an Exhibition with Conrad Eek. It's fun. I think you want to check it out. Okay, a little virtual camera club news for us here. Hey, the Bodie workshop, the Eastern Sierra Photography Workshop that's coming up this June, sold out. And I'm just really thrilled about that. You know, it's a first year workshop. We have a great crew, a nice mix of workshop veterans and folks that are new to this. Can't wait. It's so funny. B&H had a LowPro Rover Pro on sale for some ridiculous price. Like, it's normally a $299 camera backpack that you can also put a lot of personal items in. And it's designed for, you know, outdoor stuff. They had it on sale for like $79 for one day on one of their deals. I posted it on Twitter, and I posted it on Facebook too. So if you missed it, it's on you, not me. So I got that specifically for this workshop. I'm already jacked about it because, so I got this cool new backpack, and I love the Eastern Sierra. I have a passion for being out there. I've got a great setup, and now I've got this great crew that's joining me, and we're sold out. I'll be reporting more about it in June, and you might want to keep an eye on it, because if it goes well, and I anticipate that it will, I'm going to probably do it again next year, and you might want to get in then. But anyway, for this year, it's sold out. And then Red River Paper, just want to mention that they have a cool Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. And this is a place you want to keep your eye out for free paper and big discounts. You know, you're already getting a good deal with them because they make the paper and they sell the paper directly to you. So you're already getting fine museum quality, the kind of stuff that Conrad Eek would be excited about to put up, you know, on the wall there of the gallery. You're getting that quality of paper, but at a discount because of them making it and selling it directly to you. Then they actually run more discounts and give paper away on their Facebook page. So you might want to go over there, take a peek, facebook.com/redriverpaper. And they have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. And there's a little discount code on our landing page. So if you click on the tile, you can get a little discount code action going and save some money that way too. Sizzle Picks. The good folks over at Sizzle Picks, the people who create the magic I hang on my walls here at the studio. And I am not kidding about that. And, you know, it's I look at these images every day because I work downstairs. I'm up here for shooting, upstairs for shooting and recording, stuff like that. But the bulk of my day is downstairs. Imagine how much fun it is for me to be working downstairs of the studio, surrounded on all four walls by nice, big, shiny sizzle picks of my favorite images. I never get tired of coming to work, ever. They produce the magic that hangs on the walls of my studio. And you can take a look at what they have to offer by going to sizzlepix.com, sizzlepix.com. It's like a retina display you can hang on your wall, except you don't have to plug it in, and it is absolutely gorgeous. Good friends over at Sizzle Picks, longtime running sponsors of The Digital Story. Just a few other bits and bobs here. If you're ordering through B&H or Amazon, if you're going to buy something through B&H and Amazon, or if you've written me and asked for advice and I write you back with something pithy and intelligent that you actually use, if you would go to the tiles on the digital story, they're in the second column there. They're under products. Amazon and B&H, they're both there. You just click on them. It doesn't make any difference where they initially take you. Just click on them, and then you can do your search for what you want. If you do that, that helps me pay the bills for this podcast. That's all you got to do. Go to thedigitalstory.com first, click on the Amazon tile, click on the B&H tile, and then do your search, and then buy whatever you're going to buy, and know that by doing so, you're helping to support this podcast. It's the easiest way in the world to help me keep this thing on the air. It doesn't cost you a penny, but it really adds up at the end of the month. And then finally, thanks to everyone who recently reviewed the podcast in iTunes. Those reviews help me out so much because that way when new people hear about the show and they go over and they look it up on iTunes and they see current reviews, they go, oh, all right. I mean, he's got all these reviews, but even these new people are still liking it. He hasn't lost his touch. If you've done that, thank you, thank you, thank you. If you haven't done that, if you have a moment to go over and review it, I much appreciate it. All right, that is going to do it for this week. I have some excellent stories for next week. Please come back and join me. Until then, have a fabulous 7 days until we meet again. Bye-bye now.